Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. And we're also very happy to have back once again on the program Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. He has been a guest on this program for a long time. I would like to have him on a couple times during the year. And this is an opportunity for people who are listening to call in and ask car questions. Now, if you're having some kind of a problem, all you have to do is give us a call, tell us what kind of car it is, and the make, the model. Give us the best description, and Rick will see if he can help you out, suggesting where you might look for the problem. And, of course, we have other opportunity to ask other kinds of more general kind of questions about maintenance. Anything that has to do with cars, you give us a call. Rick will take his best shot. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. And we do also have a toll-free line. That means if it would be a long-distance call, we'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. At any point here, you got a question, give us a call. Well, thanks very much once again for being here.
I'm glad to be here.
Appreciate it. I was thinking, I got a question I want to try on you, and I don't know if I've asked this before, but I was thinking about the fact that certainly now people want to get the best mileage possible, and there are some questions about, well, what's the best way to get a fleet of cars in the country that will do better on gas mileage, and do you want to impose that on automakers and so forth? And so the thing I was thinking about was, is it really so difficult to design a car, and I don't know if mostly the issue here is the engine, that will get substantially better mileage than what is today the average? I mean, how hard would it be, could you build a car that would get 100 miles a gallon or 70 miles a gallon?
Well, obviously, to get mileage, you've got to make it smaller. Less weight,
yeah.
Mass. And, I think the biggest problem with the automotive manufacturers is when they build those small cars, it seems like they just don't sell. So, and it's kind of a supply and demand. And that's why the government, of course, is imposing a lot of restrictions and forcing them, literally, to downsize, make smaller cars. But that's the only way you're going to get that mileage, is to make them smaller.
So that's, I guess, what I was thinking, that yes, it seems like the cars that do have the best mileage are indeed small cars. So right. it's the big factor is the weight of the vehicle then,
yes,
essentially. Are people doing research on, novel materials, things that would be you could say build an auto body or something that would be strong enough and it would be crash resistant at all and yet would be a lot lighter? Is such a thing possible?
Well, yes, there is. It's just those materials are a lot more expensive than aluminum steel, and of course that increases the cost of the vehicle. And it's like looking at the the gas engine, electric type cars, the additional expense, it's almost $8,000. So, if you factor $8,000 into the price of the car and how long you keep it and what you do gain in mileage, it's kind of a tough one to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people, they look at it that way too.
We have some other callers. In fact, we got some callers here. Let's do that. We'll talk first with somebody on a cell phone on our toll-free line. This is line 4. Hello.
Hi, everybody. I'm approaching Kankakee. Here's my question. I have a wonderful 1999 Lincoln Town Car. Everything is perfect about it. And when I fill my gas tank up, sometimes it says you've got 372 miles you can drive, and then sometimes I fill it up to where it's dripping out again, and it just says it'll just say 322 miles. How can there be a difference in over 50 miles from when it's filled up to when it's filled up?
Well,
that's what I want to know.
When you fill it, do you let it shut itself off?
No, I let it dribble down the side a little tiny bit, tell me that it's full.
Oh, well, you should let the pump, when the pump shuts itself off,
right?
That's when you should leave it alone.
You're right. I know that. But what the discrepancy of sometimes it's full at 372. Sometimes it's full at 322. I just don't know what I do, you know?
Well, I don't know why there would be a discrepancy if you're basically, it sounds like you're filling it clear up to the filler neck.
Yeah, I always let it fill up to the very rim. Because I hate, I'm one-legged and I hate stopping for gas. So
right, well.
I just wondered why that would vary like that.
I'm not sure. There may be an issue with the sending unit, but one of the other problems with filling it all the way to the top is there's no room for expansion.
No room for expansion?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Because, you know, as you heat anything, it expands.
Absolutely.
So, and it's a lot easier. I'm surprised you don't have a check engine light coming
on. I do have a check engine light, but it doesn't come on. And when it does, I always have it checked.
Yes. And it's probably related to evaporative emission system.
Okay.
Is that correct?
Yeah, it's always something more minor than really bad. Right. It only happened to me three times.
Yeah, well, that's probably related to, in essence, overfilling.
Okay. Glad you told me that.
Yes.
Because I'll tell you, being one-legged and then driving, like I started from Decatur today, headed to Chicago, you don't want car trouble, and you don't want to stop for gas every 15 minutes.
Well,
listen, I listen to you guys on this program all the time, and I really appreciate you.
Well, thanks very much.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Thanks, guy.
All right. We'll go on to another caller here. Our guest this morning is Rick Karch. He's an auto mechanic. His business is Rick's Automotive in Champaign. And every once in a while, he's here on the program. We talk about cars and car care. If you have some kind of problem, give us a call. Tell us about it. He'll see what he can do. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Next is Champaign, line one. Hello.
Morning, fellas.
Yeah.
I'm kind of going back to prior to the first caller, sort of our theoretical conversation about mileage improvements. One thing that I've always wondered is that if you think about an internal combustion engine, so much of the energy of that reaction is lost as heat. You know, you just stand by a car and you just feel all this heat coming off, and that's just wasted energy. And I've always wondered, why doesn't somebody figure out a way to trap that heat, okay, and turn it into figure out some kind of heat transfer, whether it be creating steam or some other thing, you know, a small little additional component on the car, and use that as an additional energy source. Sort of like with the Prius, you know, you use the braking. All that energy, that potential energy from the car is turned into electricity. Why not do the same thing with heat?
I haven't heard of anybody that's done anything like that. I think it's, you know, a lot of this just goes back to efficiency versus
right.
cost and benefit.
Right.
And I think that's how they look at a lot of these ideas.
What is the efficiency of an internal combustion engine as far as the, I've heard it's something really poor because so much is lost as heat. Do you know that number?
No, I don't know the exact number.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's probably doable, but it, like you said, it's probably just, you know, getting to, you know, then you have a $100,000 car. So, all right. Well, thanks a lot.
Okay.
Let's go to Terre Haute. This is line two. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yeah.
Good morning. And also, thanks for the program.
Sure.
I have kind of a maintenance issue. My question is, how often should I rotate my tires? I do a lot of driving. I have a 2007 Ford Focus. I keep it. I do field service, so I have. It's not heavily loaded down, but there's always a load, you know, of parts and tools and things I need to carry with me. Should I rotate the tires more often, or because I have had some issues with tire wear when I forget to rotate the tires? And what's just general rule about rotating tires?
Well, that's really hard to answer because the prominent wear on the tires occurs on the front tires. So if you do a lot of in-town driving and braking and weight transfer, of course, then you're going to have a lot more wear on the front tires.
Actually, the problem I've been experiencing is some cupping on the rear tires.
Cupping?
Yes. That's what I always called it.
Is it like, so when you run your hand around the tire, there's high and low spots?
Exactly. generally, okay. and on the rear tires, generally on the inside of the rear tires. And I don't know if that's because I always have a load in the car, but and it's not, you know, it's not going to be premature, but
right. Well, the load on the inside is due to the excessive weight in the back of the vehicle, and it's referred to as camber wear. In that particular case, it's negative camber.
Okay, so that's probably because I always have some load in the car, and it's probably not designed.
Well, what you might do the next time you purchase tires, and anytime anyone purchases tires, they should have an alignment checked, is that when you purchase tires, is to load the vehicle as it normally is driven. And when you take it in for an alignment, let them know that and see if they can suggest any ideas for changing the camber on the rear so okay. that it would even out the tire wear for you.
Okay, good. But any general rule you can give me on when to rotate tires? Just a general rule?
Well, a lot of times they recommend every 7,500 miles.
Okay.
You might invest in a tire depth gauge
okay.
where you can actually measure the tire depth. And when the front tires have less tread left than the rears, that's when you need to rotate them. That's how we do it. We measure the tires, and if they're showing more tire in the rear, then we rotate them to the front.
Okay, so but just to help them even out the tread wear, then maybe every other oil change.
Yes,
a good rule of thumb.
But in your case, it may be a little bit sooner. But
yeah, well, I drive about 35,000 miles a year.
Yes.
So, I set of tires every other year, but
right.
it goes quicker if you know because. I drive so much, it's easy to forget to rotate the tires.
Right. So I think next time you purchase tires, load the vehicle like you normally do and take it in and have them check the alignment. And,
okay, that's good advice.
Okay.
And, thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
Right, thank you
thanks.
For the call. Just I would think that ideally the way the tires should be on the car is that the top of the tire should not either tip in towards the car toward or out the other way, that it should be so it should be completely sort of sitting straight as with regard to the side of the car. I mean, is that right, or is there some reason it should tip a little bit one way or another?
It does tip a little bit in at the top, and that is so that like when you're in a corner and when you're in the corner, of course, then that wheel is going to become fairly close to perpendicular
mm-hmm.
as we get load transfer
uh-huh.
in a corner.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, they typically are a little bit negative,
and that is reason. What the camber is. It's the tip of the
tire in or
the
out
tire
of the
in
top.
Or out at the top.
Yes,
right. And then so then what is it? What then is alignment?
The alignment is the checking of what they refer to as caster,
uh-huh.
camber, and toe. And camber and toe are the prominent tire wear angles. Caster does not affect tire wear. But those are the three angles that they always check. There's
okay.
others involved, too. One of the big ones that I look at when I look at an alignment sheet is what's referred to as thrust angle. And thrust angle is just simply a measurement of whether or not the front axle and the rear axle are parallel to one another so that the car goes down the road straight.
Uh-huh.
So it doesn't dog track. And that affects tire wear, too. So there's a lot of things that get done, but fundamentally those are the three.
Okay.
And you should have all four corners checked on the car.
And you do that. You should do that every time you have the tires rotated?
Yeah. No, every time you replace tires.
Okay.
Have an alignment.
All right. All right. Rick Karch is here. We're up for your questions on cars, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Next up is someone in Urbana, line 3. Hello.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I have a 95 S10 with about 180,000 miles on it, and this Friday I drove through some standing water. It wasn't super deep, but about a block afterwards, it locked up and died on me. And I let it sit for a few minutes, and it started right up. But ever since, I have this kind of dragging as I go down the road. And today it happened on the interstate, too, so I'm getting kind of worried about it.
Well,
and I'd say every 15 seconds, almost kind of a small lurch. You just kind of feel it, and it doesn't drag the engine down or anything like that. I just feel it lurch.
Oh, so the engine's not smooth.
It doesn't, like, the RPM don't change or anything like that. It's a manual, too. It just, as I'm going, I can feel a lurch in the momentum. And no indicator lights are on. The RPM doesn't change on the engine at all or anything like that.
And this is without the brake supply? This is just...
Yeah, actually, only seems to be happening when I'm accelerating.
Oh, under.
It's the only time I've noticed it. But if I'm coasting, I have not seen it happen. And no, not at all with the brakes.
Well, I would suggest taking the air cleaner out of the car and make sure there's not some standing water in the air cleaner assembly, that air cleaner box.
Okay.
Maybe there's water that every once in a while it'll eventually dry out, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But usually seems like this summer in particular, we've had quite a few cars that have done exactly what you described, and most of them have damaged the engine.
Okay.
And the first thing we always do is inspect the air filter, and that gives us a pretty good idea of how much water actually got into the engine. So maybe it's just little droplets of water every once in a while that it's creating that.
Okay. Now, I was worried it was more something like the drivetrain or anything, but you think
I wouldn't think so.
Okay. Well, I will check that out. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Next we go to another Urbana person here, line number one. Hello.
Good morning, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Morning.
I have a Mercedes-Benz 280 SE 1984. The fuel distributor not pumping fuel.
Then, so the car won't start?
That's right.
Okay. So has anyone checked fuel pressure?
No.
Okay. Well, you've got to have adequate fuel pressure for that to work.
Oh.
I believe that's the one with the continuous injection system, or CIS, they call it.
Yes.
Yeah, it has to have correct control pressure and system pressure.
Thank you.
All right, you're welcome.
All right, very good.
Bye-bye.
And again, to another call here. This is someone in Savoy on our line four. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I purchased a 2002 Sebring convertible on eBay. It's down in Florida. Took an airplane down there and drove it back. It's a very nice appearance car, just no problems at all. I monitored it all the way back and found no problems, but when I set it in my garage, I later found a drip underneath there. So I started trying to figure out what that was, and it was dripping fairly heavily. Did not notice any drop at all in the transmission indicator on the dipstick, but it was dripping, and had it diagnosed as a transmission cooler line with a major leak in it, and then they also talked about some seeping in a trans solenoid pack and then it needed transmission service. And I'm just wondering at this point whether I want to put a lot of more money in this car. It's not a new car, and not real expensive. Whether that indicates even more serious transmission problems than what's been diagnosed at this point.
Well, as far as those cooler hoses are concerned, that's very, very common. You just simply replace them. There are two hoses, and they go from the transmission to the radiator, the cooler. And maybe what they're referring to is like transmission pan gasket, maybe, that's leaking a little bit. I mean, you said something about a solenoid.
It just said that it looks like it says solinod, but I think it probably means solenoid.
Yes.
And solenoid pack would be replaced, and then a transmission service would include a filter and flush.
Okay.
That's what they're advocating to be the source of the problem. And I wasn't familiar with transmission cooling lines when I was growing up. We didn't have those, I guess, but that's not an unusual problem, you're saying.
No, not at all.
And would not necessarily be related to anything else with the transmission or any other problems?
No. No, it seemed to shift okay for you?
Yes, it does shift. The only thing I noticed is once when I wanted to take it from, I guess I had probably in park to take it back to drive, I noticed that it didn't want to shift out of that. That's when it was setting stationary. And maybe it was just, I was not familiar with shifting the car at that point. That's the only thing I ever noticed. Nothing underway.
I see.
In about 1,400 miles.
Well, as far as the transmission service is concerned, you can just visually look at the color of the fluid with the dipstick. Yes. It should be red.
Yes.
I don't know.
It is from the transmission, I'm sure, and it's very difficult to when I lay underneath there, look up there, because it basically is spread over everything now.
Right.
Which correct. I would expect it as a way of just covering everything and finding the lowest spot where it drips out, but that is probably not even close to where the lines are, maybe.
Well, where the lines are is they're just inside of the driver's side headlight. And if you look down there with a flashlight, you'll see where they attach.
Well, that's about where it's coming from then, so they probably are dripping out of there.
Yes, that's more than likely what it is.
Would there be anything else you would do if I do decide I want to keep the car and put the money into it? Is there anything else you would do at that time to maybe ensure longer life or at least give a better probability of longer life on the transmission?
Well,
other than changing the filter and...
Well, that's would be the suggestion, would be the transmission service. How many miles are on the car?
85,000.
Okay. And there should be a maintenance book. Does it have anything documented?
It doesn't appear to have. It was a one owner. It was a woman that owned the car, and the only thing I could find was brake work at about 45,000 miles and changing of tires and things like that, but I don't have any other documentation on it.
Okay. What you might do is call the dealer and give them the VIN number, the vehicle identification number, and they can enter that into the system. And any service work that's been done in the dealer network will be documented, and they can print those out for you. So maybe that would be one place to start.
That sounds very good.
And at least you can see if it's ever had, you know, if it had the 60,000-mile service, which was an important one.
I tend to give the benefit of the doubt to the dealer. He had, like, 500 cars sold, and he never had any complaints and negative feedback, so... If there were problems, he would have figured some way to cover it up. But I think it's possible that it just actually opened up in the time I drove it home. It had maybe been sitting in his lot for a couple of months, and then I drive it. Maybe that was enough to...
It's possible, yes.
Okay, I will give a call on that, and I thank you. You do that kind of work in most shops like yours?
Or? Yes, okay. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Right. You're welcome.
Thank you. Midway through this hour, Focus 580. Rick Karch is here from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. Once, twice, or three or four times a year, he's here. We talk about car care, and it's a chance to call in and ask questions about maybe you have a particular problem with your vehicle, and you can call in and tell us about it, or you have some more general questions about maintenance. What have you, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Next up is someone in Champaign, line two. Hello.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. You were talking about fuel efficiency earlier. I wanted to see if you could comment, if you know what you think about this. We have a full-size van and this gas hog. So when we're on the highway, we start experimenting with high-octane fuel, just 92, 93 octane. And we used to get like 10, 11, 12 miles per gallon with regular gas, and if you use high octane, we can go up to 14. And then just the other day, we went to Minnesota, and we tried Shell top-of-the-line 93 octane, and we actually got 18 miles per gallon, driving exactly the same way. And so I was wondering if you cared to comment about that or if you know about that kind of stuff.
Well, sometimes it works that way, and sometimes it's just the opposite. Basically, the higher octane fuel burns more slowly.
Mm-hmm.
So it is an experiment. I've known people that have complained about fuel mileage when they use the high octane. And I said, well, you know, step down one and try a tank of that and then step down one more. And sometimes the lower octane does better than the high octane. So
so you can go either way.
Yes.
All right. Well, we thought let people to know so they can try because that's
Well, that's exactly right. It's just an experiment, and each car is different. Obviously, in your case, as far as mileage is concerned, tire pressure is extremely important.
Right.
And to always use the cruise control as much as you can.
Right.
And then you'll also find with a big van like that, sometimes there's certain speed.
That is, the wind, too. The wind would make everything.
Well, yeah, the wind, because you're pushing a lot of resistance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, okay. Well, thanks.
Thank you.
Much. All right, thank you. And I guess it is true that, as you say, there's going to be a speed at which you're going to get your best mileage.
Yes.
And it might not be the speed you want to go.
That's right.
Because we all want to get where we're going, and the prevailing speed on the interstates and the highways is pretty high, and it's, of course, it's higher than the posted limit. But if that's really important to you, then maybe you ought to, you know, pay attention to what your mileage is. And I think that now there are a lot of cars that actually have a readout on the dashboard that'll tell you as you're going along what the mileage
yes.
is. So you can figure out at what speed you're going to get your best gas mileage.
Yep. And generally, if you have a tachometer, you can kind of gauge by that too. Obviously, the slower the engine is turning, the more efficient the mileage is going to be.
Yeah.
So. But yes, you're right. There's a certain speed.
Yeah. And I remember, you know, at one point we had the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit, and that was the idea, that it was supposed to be all around the best mileage people were – you were going to say, well, you're going to get it if you drive at that speed.
Right.
Is that pretty much in the ballpark, or does it really vary with cars?
Well, it does vary, but – you know, slower speed, no matter what kind of car it is, it's going to get better mileage. Uh-huh. You know, you've got some states, speed limit's 70. So, you know, Indiana's 70 now. So, you know, and it, you know, if you go above the speed limit for X amount of time, you know, depending on the length of your trip, you may not really be saving that much time. You may only save 20 minutes. So... but, yeah, it's just like the earlier caller with the van. It's just a matter of each car is different.
Yeah.
And there really is not a set answer. And if you want to experiment, that's the best way to do it.
And I suppose on any given day, given the conditions, as this caller said, for example, I guess particularly if you have a high-profile vehicle, wind is going to make a difference. I would imagine that... I don't know. These are going to make a big difference whether it's winter or summer.
Well, obviously in the winter, you're never going to get the same mileage. The engine, you know, takes longer to warm up and uses more fuel. And, of course, the terrain obviously has a big difference too.
Yeah.
But steady throttle or cruise control... And cruise control should not be used in the rain at all for safety issues. If the car should happen to slide or lose traction, the computer is going to try to accelerate the engine, and likelihood then you're going to lose control of the vehicle is a possibility. So that's why you should not use cruise control in the rain.
But if it's a clear day, the pavement's dry, and you're driving over a long distance where basically you're just sitting there and the car is just going, you think cruise control is good?
Well, it's going to be much more efficient than you are,
right?
In regulating that speed and throttle position.
Okay. Other calls are welcome here, and we got several ready to go. Up next is Lafayette, Indiana, line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Oh.
Yeah.
I got a 2000 Pontiac Montana. Got a transmission question for you. Normally, it will shift just smooth and fine how it should shift. Every once in a while, probably 2-3 times a week, I get into a hard shift. And when that happens is, say we shut the vehicle off. We've driven it some distance, and then we shut the vehicle off, then restart the vehicle, and then... when you take off, if you were to hit a dip in the road or a bump on a shift from first to second, it'll make it shift real hard. And then each time it shifts from that point forward, it'll shift real hard, and the transmission makes a whining noise. Now, if you pull off to the side of the road and you shut it off and you wait a few minutes and then you take back off again, it'll just shift just smooth, just like it should shift.
Well, the whining noise implies to me that the system pressure has escalated for some reason. A solenoid is stucking, a sticking, or a valve.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the same thing when you turn the steering wheel all the way to the right or to the left and hold it there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the pressure escalates, and you get that whining noise.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably... When was the last time the transmission was serviced?
We serviced it probably about, I'm going to say, between 25 and 40,000 miles ago.
Okay.
Somewhere in there. I had the flush and the new fluid, new filter. Kind of seemed like at that time that it helped, you know, for a while, I would say.
Right.
Every once in a while, we'd still experience it. It just always kind of puzzled me how the dip or the bump in the road would seem to make that difference. That was what was always thought was kind of strange. I was kind of like you. I kind of thought it was a pressure issue. Also, might have thought maybe it might have been an external electrical issue. And it could just be a solenoid in the transmission, too. But mm-hmm. Just kind of curious.
Well, you did say they changed the filter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these places don't do that.
Right.
And so you still have all the sediment.
Right.
In the pan.
Mm-hmm. We also, at the same time, we did that, used some Seafoam Transtune in it at the same time. I don't know how you feel about any of those products. But
well, some of those products you're not supposed to leave in there.
Okay. Really? You're supposed to just flush it. Now, I can't remember if we actually flushed it or if we actually left it in.
Some of them tell you to put it in there for a period of time,
mm-hmm.
but not to leave it in there.
Okay.
So you might try another service.
Try another service, maybe.
And make sure they're using the factory recommended fluid.
Okay. Not sure exactly what product that they use. I think it was a Napa product, mm-hmm. as far as the fluid.
Yeah, I would specify that you want the factory fluid.
So like regular GM fluid.
Correct.
Okay. Well, we might try that. It's never, you know, we never really, I haven't been stranded or anything like that. It was just that hard shift.
Right.
And what do you, I suppose stopping the vehicle would release that pressure?
Yes, whatever is stuck.
And okay.
It sounds like it's something electrical,
mm-hmm.
because if you turn the key off, you power everything down.
Right.
And then you turn it back on, and then it doesn't stick. So
okay.
As far as the bump is concerned, I don't know the correlation there.
Yeah, it shouldn't be really any correlation between the two, you wouldn't think.
No.
And probably an electronic solenoid inside the transmission?
That's
or
what it sounds like to me.
Electronic solenoid?
Yeah, something.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll try another... You know, change the fluid in the filter and put the GM fluid in there.
And make sure you mention to him about the noise associated with the hard shift, which correlates with excessive pressure.
Okay.
So, you know, as the pressure goes up, the shifts are going to become harder.
Right. Okay.
So while they've got the pan off,
mm-hmm.
if there's some particular solenoid that's readily accessible
mm-hmm.
without dropping the whole valve body down,
uh-huh.
I would just change it.
Oh, really? There is one that's...
Well, you have to research that.
Right. Okay. I know what you're talking about. There's sometimes some in there that you can get to easily. Yeah.
You know, maybe a problem with the governor, but...
Okay. It sounds like... I guess that makes sense because, you know, back in the 70s when you put like a shift kit in something to make it shift hard, that's basically what it did, is it raised the pressure, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly... I never really thought about that. Okay. Thanks for your help.
All right, you're welcome.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
So we'll go on here, and next we'll talk with somebody in Normal. And this is line one. Hello.
Hey, hello.
Mm-hmm.
AM580, you here. What an awesome – I'll donate money anytime you guys like get a chance. But, hey, I just want to – we have a Volkswagen station wagon, diesel, and it gets about 46 on the highway. And then we took it out to Colorado – And we were doing about 75, 80 going across Kansas or Nebraska, I forgot which one. And on that day, it was hot, so we had the air conditioning running, and we were doing like 75, 80 the whole day. We got 38 miles a gallon that day. But then we took it up to Sud's in Peoria to get it serviced, get an oil change, which you only got to do now once every 10,000 miles. And that we were talking about transmissions and stuff, and they said that they had a 6-speed transmission that they could put in there to even get better fuel mileage on the highway like that. And then I started walking around the lot. They had a Mercedes over there. It was about the size of a Chevy Lumina, nice, big, full-size car, big, huge trunk space, and it was a diesel 6-cylinder. That thing got 43 on the highway. I would just like to know, how is it that the Germans can come up with all this, whereas, you know, GM and Ford, or these other, they just seem to be lacking in that area. I'm just kind of curious. Why can the Europeans do it, but we can't have it here? Because I would love to buy American, but I'm just not going to do it.
Right. Well, the diesel is typically going to do a lot better. And they've, of course, been building them a long time, so, the technology... It just seems like I don't know if it's just the diesel, the odor, or the noise that shies people away. It's one of those things, you either love them or you hate them type scenario with diesels. And your experience is very similar to what I hear quite often.
Oh, yeah, it's fabulous. I mean, there's less maintenance on the engine, and there's no spark plugs to worry about.
Right.
The oil change is once every 10,000 miles, and it's just, I mean, now sometimes diesel does get more expensive.
Yeah, the fuel.
Yeah, but I was in there, but I was looking at that Mercedes at the dealership, and I thought, I got a sister of mine, and sometimes they got a bunch of kids, and sometimes they're a little strapped for cash. I was like, they could really, because they got a Chevy Lumina. And that silly thing, that gets like 22 on the highway or something. I was sitting there thinking, I was like, man, if I had the money, I'd buy that Mercedes for my sister. And it's like just... Oh, and here's another thing. I was sitting there. I grew up downstate Illinois, and I had a very good friend of mine, good, hard-working family, big time. Never missed him in church. They're always there, worked their butts off. He's an engineer to this day. But he was talking about, he's just a very good, soft-spoken, solid character person. You could always, whatever Paul told you something, you knew it was true and you could believe it. And he was talking about his friend's dad had bought, man, this was back in the late 70s. He said that they bought an Impala V8 off of a dealership down there somewhere, and he drove it for 2 weeks, and the gas gauge didn't move. He thought, well, man, there's something wrong with it. So he took it back into the dealership, and they checked it out, and they're like, ah, sir, you accidentally got an experimental prototype carburetor, and you've been getting 75 miles to a gallon. And they took off the carburetor and put on the conventional standard one, and he was getting back to the 18. They're like, there you go, it's fixed now. And and that's what Paul was telling me, was like, he was like, he regretted it. He had no idea. He thought the gas gauge was broke, but he's like, now he had to fill it up.
Right.
So sometimes I've heard like Senator Wyden talk about it. It's a patent technology. I believe they do have the technology. We put a man on the moon, and we were able to develop enough weapons technology to destroy the world three times over. I think that we've got the brain power to probably get this stuff cranked out going like today.
Well,
I'll let you go.
I appreciate
on that
the
idea.
Guy. Yeah,
I'll let you go on that idea.
I think the caller raises a really interesting question. I guess I've thought about it too. Why is it that diesels just somehow never caught on in the United States? And I know they can be hard to start in when it's cold. And would you say, they have a very distinctive odor, and they do make a, they make a particular noise. You know it when you hear it. So, but I don't, maybe that explains it.
Well, maybe it's just in the beginning, when they first came out, they didn't have the blended fuels. And diesel fuel, in the winter, you need a different viscosity and gel point, they refer to it, where it actually solidifies. And that's why when you go to truck stops, the semis are always running. And I think it's just in the beginning, and maybe it's just one of those things that, because I remember having a diesel back then and being on the highway, and it gradually lost power, and it was because it was so cold, and the fuel was actually starting to gel, so it wouldn't flow. So, you know, maybe it goes back to years and years ago, and it just, but a lot of people that, I don't know what I mean to say, just women only, but it's just the noise and the odor. And the other thing, too, is the diesel fuel. I don't understand why it costs more than gasoline. It should be the other way around.
Yeah.
Because of the refining process. So.
Okay. Well, we got some other callers here. And just to mention that in the second hour this morning, about 11:20, or not about, at 11:20, we're going to NPR for coverage of a live press conference. President Obama is having a press conference, and we asked Rick if he would just hang in for a little bit of the first part of the next hour, and he said sure. So we will have some extra time this morning with Rick. We'll do our usual market update in the news, and then we'll come back at 11:06, and we'll go until 11:20. So we have plenty of time for questions. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Next is Urbana. Line two. Hello.
Would you please comment about one gasoline company's claim that they're putting nitrogen in their gasoline now and it's better for your engine?
I haven't heard that. Who's doing that?
Shell. They're running television commercials.
Yeah, I've seen them.
Have you seen it? Yeah. I haven't seen that.
Yeah. And I sort of had that same question, like, well, what is that? You know, what is that going to? What is that going to do? I don't know.
Yeah, is that going to help your engine?
I don't know. I think that's more of
it. Remove sludge, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's more of a. So it's strictly for cleaning the engine, as opposed to.
According to the commercial, yes.
Oh, okay.
What about nitrogen in tires instead of air? Is that a good idea?
Well, it is, in the fact that. The tire nitrogen is always used in racing, and the reason that it's always used in racing is that as the tire rotates going down the road, it generates heat, and of course, tire pressure goes up. So nitrogen maintains the same pressure, and it doesn't change as much. So that's the main reason for the nitrogen concept.
Okay.
But
so
I'll
stop by your place someday and ask about nitrogen and gasoline.
Well,
see what you find.
Yeah, I haven't read anything about that as far as, you know, if it's like most of the gasoline.
It shows sludge coming off of the piston.
I see. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So I didn't know that in racing cars they put nitrogen in the tires. Really?
Yes.
I don't suppose that a regular passenger vehicle you'd build up the kind of heat in the tires so that you would need to do anything so exotic.
No, but it helps with tire wear because it more closely keeps that pressure at the recommended number. You know, a lot of people advertise it. I don't know that it's worth the expense. You know, it seems to be kind of an expensive proposition to change that. But
so if you wanted to, you could go out and provided you knew where to go, you could go and get somebody who would put nitrogen in your tires as opposed to air. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the dealers advertise that. Oh. Yes.
Okay. Well, other questions, welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Line three is next. Somebody in Champaign. Hello.
Hi there.
Yeah.
So a couple of things. The first one has to do with our car, which is a 2005 Toyota Sienna XL. And, you know, the belts on it just make the worst noise, especially in humidity. In high humidity, and we've asked, you know, the dealer to what's going on, why does it do that, and they say it's just sometimes that's what belts do, and it's just irritating. I don't know if there's anything else that can be done about it, and just thought I'd ask your ideas. And then the other thing is, if for those, so contemplating maybe the purchase of a hybrid vehicle, what kind of additional maintenance above and beyond what, you know, normal car requires, would there be, or is there any? Maybe there aren't as many requirements. So I'll just hang up and listen on the air. Thanks.
Okay. You're welcome. Well, as far as the belts are concerned, if this is an issue that keeps reoccurring, it has to do with alignment of the belts. It could be a tensioner. It could be an idler pulley. So the alignment of the belts and the components needs to be checked carefully. As far as the hybrid is concerned, the maintenance is really very, very similar. I mean, it's still got the gas engine. So it still has the normal oil services and the normal maintenance, and it's really not that much different.
Okay. Other questions welcome. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. We have about maybe 5 minutes here, and then Rick's going to hang in for a little bit of the beginning of the next hour until 11:20 when we go to NPR, and we got our live coverage of the news conference. I want to go back to something. Maybe this is something everybody knows, but just to review, so if you go out and you see something, a puddle underneath your car, and you're wondering, okay, what is this? One thing that people can bear in mind is the different fluids that you put in the car, they make them different colors for that reason, at least in part, I guess, for that reason, so you get some tip off of what it is. A transmission fluid is pink?
Well,
it's pinkish, red?
Pink, red.
Okay. The coolant is going to be sort of greenish yellow.
It can be green, yellow, orange, pink. Engine oil is, by the time it hits the ground, it's typically black.
Yeah.
Brake fluid is fairly basically clear. So, and it's normal when you have the air conditioning running and you pull into your garage and you shut the vehicle off, there's going to be a puddle of water under the car. That's normal.
Yeah.
So that shouldn't concern you. And it's usually always going to be near the passenger side of the car toward the front is where the evaporator drain is. So it's kind of the same concept if you watch a window air conditioner. It's got a little drain hose that comes off it. And it's constantly dripping. It's the same principle. Yeah.
Well, it's squeezing the moisture out of the air, right. So that's what it's the condensate from the air conditioner.
Right, from the hot air going through the evaporator. So that's a normal. Any fluid leak near a corner of a car, meaning near an actual tire, is going to be brake fluid. And that should definitely be a concern. And usually when you have a brake fluid leak, if you apply moderate application to the brake pedal will actually sink to the floor. So as you're pushing down on the brake pedal, the fluid is being lost. That's why the pedal goes to the floor. So those are pretty much the colors, yes.
Okay. And so it's good you also say pay attention to what color it is, but also pay attention to where it is. That is, does it seem to be coming from a particular place?
Yes.
And that's also going to tell you something.
Yes. Yeah. So when you take the vehicle in, you mentioned the color. Sometimes customers will actually bring in, they'll put a newspaper on the ground or a piece of cardboard, and sometimes they'll actually bring that in with the car.
Yeah.
And then obviously the location is very helpful.
Yeah. So does it indeed, would it help you if you knew what color it was so that'd give you a better idea what it was?
It would. And generally, if it's a leak that drips on the ground, it's going to be fairly easy to find.
Yeah.
And some of them are kind of time-consuming to locate because some of them are behind covers, seals. Sometimes you put a dye in there and you can go over the engine with a black light. Mm. So... Mm-hmm. So don't expect if you take the car in that they're going to be able to find the leak in 2 minutes, because if it's behind a cover or a shield, it's going to take time to diagnose.
Yeah. How, if you notice anything, should that concern you, or should it only be if it's a lot and if it happens all the time?
Well, any leaks whatsoever should be addressed, and they can be evaluated. You can say, okay, this is in... another 6 months, we'll look at it again and we'll see if it's gotten worse. And sometimes when you know, okay, let's say you do have a leak and you know it's a seal and it's behind the cover and it's an engine that has a timing belt, and you know the timing belt's coming up on a normal service anyhow, that you can actually wait for that. And then sometimes a small drip may be a $500 drip, and it may not really be worth $500 to repair it because it's not going to get any worse. So it just has to be evaluated by the technician looking at the car, conversation with the owner, and make a decision on that. So, yeah, sometimes the leaks just aren't worth it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we're coming about to the point here we're going to pause. And at 11:20, we are going to National Public Radio for live coverage of a press conference. President Obama is holding a press conference. And we asked Rick if he'd just hang in a little bit into the next hour for a little while, and we'll keep talking, and he's going to do that. So if more folks out there who are listening have questions about their cars, you certainly are welcome to call in just a little bit after we get through our update on the market and the news.
Maybe a little more than that. The mechanic who did some other work on the car said that's just nothing. He said that that's just kind of the way they get older. Is there anything you can do to that? If a gasket smith, anything you put on the outside of it, just keep them leaking like that nature?
No, because the gasket has deteriorated. So if you put something on the outside where you put it, it's going to leak on the other side of that adhesive or sealer that you put there. So no, there's really not much. And, of course, when it leaks on the front, sometimes it drips down onto the exhaust and you get that odor or smell.
Yeah, this is not doing that. It's just kind of coming down the off to the left from the exhaust. So it's, other than leaking, that seems but minorly. That's the only problem I found. So
it's on the driver's side of the?
No, it'd be on the front left.
Which side is left?
Or the passenger side, passenger side.
You sure it's not a distributor O-ring?
Well, I'm not positive. I thought it was that, but maybe it's the other thing you're talking about.
Yeah, because that's where the distributor is, and those O-rings get quite brittle, and they definitely do leak.
Good, so they'll have it checked out then, because it's not using any oil whatsoever on the dipstick. So.
Well, yeah, it doesn't. A little leak can make quite a mess.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll have that checked out then.
All righty.
All right, very good.
You're welcome.
Let's go next to Savoy. Line 3, hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. I have a 1996 Lumina, and for quite a while now, when I first turn it on and I try to back out of the garage, it kind of chug-a-chug-a-chug like it's going to stall out. And then by the time I get to the end of the driveway, it seems okay, and I can drive off to wherever I'm going, and wherever I park, it starts right up again. But I'm wondering what might be causing that, and I don't know what to do about it for sure. No lights are coming on or anything in the panel there.
No check engine light?
No.
So basically just runs rough.
Yeah,
sometimes
when I first start it up, I don't drive it too often, and I don't drive it very far, but it's never done this before, so I don't know what to think.
Well, my first reaction is that there's a possibility that one of the fuel injectors is dripping gasoline when you shut the car off, and because the injector is dirty.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you start the car, it runs a little bit rough, and then it gradually gets smoother and smoother, and then it finally is fine until the next day, and then it repeats the scenario. Because when you shut the car off, it maintains residual fuel pressure in the system. So my first suggestion is to put a bottle of Tektron. Tektron is a fuel injector cleaner in the gas tank. You just buy it at any parts store, and you just pour it in the gas tank. And you should use that 4 times a year. I would start with that, and I would use it for probably 2 tanks. You're not going to notice a difference if you put it in today. It's not going to fix it tomorrow. It's going to take time. But that would be my first suggestion to try that.
A bottle of Tektron in the fuel tank 4 times a year, but the first time to do it twice in a row after I empty out the fuel tank?
Yes, correct.
Okay. And then the other question I had real quick is synthetic oil. The car is pretty old and we've never used it. Do you think there's any point in switching to synthetic now for the 1996 Lumina?
How many miles a year do you put on the car?
not very many. I think it's only got 79,000 miles on it now.
Well, if you went the synthetic, then you could just go to... So you're saying you put less than 5,000 miles a year on the car?
Probably, yeah. It doesn't get driven any long distances, right, just around town. And I don't have it out that often, just to get groceries and things like that.
Yes, that would be a wise choice.
To switch over?
Yes.
And what does that involve, draining the old oil out and then cleaning up? And
just a normal oil service. You drain the oil, change the filter, and put the synthetic in. There's really nothing else involved.
Okay. And why do some people get so many miles on their car? We don't seem to get that many miles on our cars before they start having problems, and we take them in regularly for oil and filter changes. So what is it that foreign cars do better? Or like the last man that called said he had 170,000 miles. We've never gotten that out of a car.
Well, a lot of it has to do with how it's driven. The cars that sit a lot, have short trips, are the ones that typically have problems as they get older.
Okay.
You know, the highway driving, it's less stressful on the engine. It always is getting to an operating temperature. So, you know, it's just
a little healthier for it.
It definitely is. Short trips are hard on any car.
Okay, so if I took it out on the highway, say once a week, I mean just to get it up to a good speed, would that make any difference, or would it have to be something you did regularly?
No, what you need to do is when you go to the grocery store, maybe go a little different route that maybe takes 5 or 6 miles to get there so that the car gets up to temperature.
Okay.
It's not really the concept of go out on the highway and see how fast you can go.
No, but I meant if it got up to a higher speed that I might then, you know.
Not really. With the fuel injection system that's on that car, it really doesn't make much difference.
Okay, so it just needs to warm up a little more then? Is that why you said maybe go a longer route to the grocery store?
Yes, correct.
Okay, all right. Well, thank you so much for your help. I really appreciate
it. You're welcome.
All right, thank you. So, so the important issue is the amount of time that the car's running.
Yes.
And the fuel gauge the thing on your dash, whatever it is that tells you the temperature of the engine, where should it be at its
normal
optimum
state.
Normal temperature?
And, well, most cars, it's somewhere between a third of the way and halfway is typical.
And is that where your owner's manual tell you that or say anything about that?
No.
No.
Okay. No, most of them don't tell you specifically where it's to be because, as you can imagine, if they did that, everybody would be coming in and saying, well, mine's not
it's not where it's
right
supposed
there.
To be.
You know, and it might be a needle width to the left or a needle width to the right. So, no, they're not going to.
Okay.
Yeah, but most cars, if you monitor the temperature, the newer vehicles that are fuel-injected, computerized, are running around 220 degrees.
Okay.
For coolant temperature.
All right. Well, let's see. We get one more caller here. We have a couple of minutes left, and that's someone on a cell phone here, line one. Hello.
Hi. I just have a quick question regarding a 2000 Toyota Celica. It has over 250,000 miles on it, and my husband is interested in knowing whether or not he should replace the engine. The rest of the car is in excellent condition, and so it's just an idea. What are your thoughts on that?
Is there a problem with the engine?
Well, it's pretty much run its period. The engine light's been on for, I don't know, about a year now. So he's pretty much running it into the ground. He's getting the oil changes and things like that, but he thinks it would just last a lot longer if we got it done now and instead of waiting.
Well, the engine that's in the car now is really not worth anything different the way it is now or in 6 months or however many miles from now. So unless you have a specific problem with the engine itself, if the check engine light's on, that's a computer-related light. We're not talking about oil pressure light, are we?
No.
Okay. So you could start doing research, and what I would encourage him to do is try to purchase an engine from Japan.
Okay. And I believe that's what you recommended before, so mm-hmm. I wanted to double-check and make sure it's a right. logical idea.
Right, because those engines okay. are typically around 30 to 40,000 miles on them.
Okay. And what is, like, the cost and maintenance for something that large of a project?
Well, it's typically in the 15-hour range to change that engine.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Right. You're welcome. Thank you. Well, and there, I think we'll wrap it up for this time around with our thanks to Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. Every once in a while he's here. We talk about cars. And any last real quick thing other than do whatever the maintenance in your owner's manual says?
No, the maintenance is the number one thing.
Yeah.
And follow that and keep up with the oil changes.
All right. Well, thanks very much.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate it.